The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live
from Milwaukee, where we do hotel shows. Again, I could be out in the downtown area, sports bar, a lot of ambiance, and it could just pour like buckets. And I said, I'm not going to screw around with this. So show on the road, and we're pleased and proud to be here with the Suns. It's tomorrow night, they'll have game number four. Spurge is with us. We'll get to him momentarily. We're brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support on the road with the Suns. Really excited for today's show. We have Nate McMillan, the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks. Nate hired Monty Williams in Portland as an assistant. I want to get into, again, bringing you a voice of the development of Monty Williams as a head coach. Also, Nate was just named the head coach of the Hawks, got a four-year deal, and they lost to the Bucks in the semifinals, so he can give me some good X and O's, a deep dive, a chop it up with Nate McMillan. Bob Ryan is going to be with us, the great Bob Ryan, Boston Globe columnist for many years, ESPN sports reporter, NBA enthusiast, and all of that. Bob Ryan on Team USA losing again last night. Falling hard. 0-2. Is there time to panic? And also the final series with Bob Ryan. Spurge is with us, though. I want to have Spurge on right off the top. What am I missing in Phoenix in terms of Suns stuff? Because this is day three in Milwaukee. I have two more to go. What am I missing there?
Yeah, Brad, I've seen your photos in Milwaukee, and it looks like it's pretty busy there, too. But energy's still high in Phoenix. Fans are happy. You got a mixed feeling. A lot of people are happy the Suns and four chants are done. Others are bummed because they've kind of created a whole brand around it. But everyone in Phoenix right now, from what I'm seeing, just walking around in downtown the last couple of days, is still feeling pretty high energy. And they're excited to see this game potentially close out in five, and they can maybe see their Suns win at home. That's the hope for a lot of Suns fans right now.
Well, and you've been doing the business side, too, and I like that. So these poor business people that have had to put up with bad baseball and bad basketball for so long, I don't know how they've stayed with their doors open, but you went out in the community in downtown to do a piece that I think is important for business owners to know the impact of sports. Jerry Colangelo taught this to me 25 years ago. It's not about the game. I mean, the game is important, but it's the lifeblood of the community when you have businesses that live off of these sports teams when they are good. Tell me about that story a little bit.
Yeah, it'll be on the TV show this week. So everybody tune in to Bally Sports Arizona, Sports 360 show this week. But every single restaurant that I went to and the owners that I talked with or the executive chefs that I talked with, yeah. I mean, they're just smiling ear to ear. They're all saying they're happy to come to work right now. They love everyone coming in with their Phoenix Suns gear. They enjoy creating new things that are Suns themed, you know, whether it's purple buns or stickers with Devin Booker and Chris Paul's head on deer hunters or buck hunters and things like that. And so they're just glad with everything that's happened the last year and a half, especially to have something that's giving them that boost in business in downtown and all the way out in Gilbert and Tempe and went up to Chandler at one point and just kind of got a feel for it. And they're just glad to see the Suns win. Some of them are diehard fans themselves, so it's kind of twofold. And yeah. Others, they're just really living in the fact that, you know, their businesses are thriving because of the Suns being so good.
Well, here's what's got to be happening. Some of these business owners privately have to be rooting for the Suns to lose because it means game five. And that means a whole nother pile of cash is going to pour in on game five. And you go, you know what? There's nothing wrong with that. Saturday night in downtown with, and I know the Cubs are in town this weekend, too, for the Diamondbacks. It doesn't matter how bad the Diamondbacks are. It's like a Cubs convention. Between the Cubs in town and now that there's a Game 5, some of these businesses downtown are going to make so much money to get them through what usually is the worst part of the year for them, summer, because there's nobody around. So if this thing goes 7, those people are doing backflips. They've got to be thrilled with all this.
They are. I think after game two, when I was outside the arena, I brought a basketball hoop and I was having people dunk when I was interviewing them and just having fun. But one guy, that was his answer. He goes, you know what? I hope it goes 5 or 7 because I'm all about the local economy. And he like went and gave a spiel about how it's good for the local economy, which I thought was really cool because it's true. Like, everyone out here is benefiting from the Suns playing more games. And so, you know, everyone wants to say Suns in five. I like what Greg Esposito's been saying on Twitter. He's getting the hashtag going, Suns in whatever it takes. I think that is better because who knows how many games this goes, but either way, it's going to be good for the city of Phoenix right now.
Yeah. All right. I'll let you go off that. Thanks for bopping in for a few minutes.
Of course. Thanks, Brad.
There's Spurge. All right. You can follow him. So what is it, Spurge? It's Spurge underscore, right? I always screw it up, right?
Yep. That's what it is. Yep.
Yeah, I got it. There's Spurge. It's great work there. Okay, so we're going to get into the Bucks here a little bit. I want to talk about picking your poison. And then we'll have Nate McMillan and we'll have Bob Ryan with us. So what has gone on here the last few days from what I have seen and just talking with people is what are the Suns going to do? And this starts with Chris Paul talking about building a wall. The idea of you got to build a wall in the paint because Giannis will break through the wall. And with the injury to Dario Saric, you know, Frank Kaminsky tried. Cam Johnson tried. Cam Johnson, I thought, did a nice job at home the other night. Jay Crowder ended up late on a couple of possessions. And Giannis went crazy. Giannis has scored 40 points in back-to-back games here in the finals. Last guy to do that was a guy named Michael Jordan. You might have heard of him. And he did it in four straight games of 40 points or more. So tomorrow night, can the Suns defensively build the wall? In about 45 minutes, the Suns are going to be meeting with the media here by Zoom in Milwaukee. And I'm sure they're going to be asked more about Chris Paul's comment of building the wall. When you look at the other big men, DeAndre Ayton is doing a good job. It's just if he picks up those fouls, if I'm Milwaukee, I'm going right at DeAndre Ayton. I have to be honest, that has got to be the strategy. Get him out because there's nobody that can stay with Giannis for the rest of the night. Doesn't matter if it's Crowder. Doesn't matter if it's Kaminsky, doesn't matter who they throw at him. And so will Monty go differently? Will they pick up full court? Will they try and push the shot clock down? You know, when I talk about picking your poison, okay, you collapse on Giannis and you're saying, Middleton, go ahead and beat us. And he did the other night. You're saying, Drew Holiday, go ahead and beat us. And he did the other night. You're saying, Bobby Portis, you know, go down the list of players that Milwaukee has. And if they hit the outside shot and the Suns try to play Giannis straight up and DeAndre Ayton's in foul trouble, the Suns are in trouble. They are. Now, do you say, okay, Giannis, go ahead and score your 40, but we're going to play tight and tough and we're going to play straight up and you can go get your 40 and you can be asked about being like Jordan afterwards and all that, but we're not going to let the other guys beat you. So when I talk about picking your poison, that's what this series to me has started to evolve into. Which way are you going to go? And I'm going to talk to Nate McMillan about that in a couple of minutes, the head coach of the Atlanta Hawks, who just lost to the Bucks in the finals of the East. So there's that that's on my mind. I watched some of the Home Run Derby last night, and it's fine. It's fine. You're hitting the ball a long ways. The production was dreadful. When they're just showing guys hitting a ball off their bat and not following the ball, I don't know what ESPN was thinking last night. It's like, okay, I want to see the ball go out of the park. But tonight I will be watching Ohtani pitching to Tatis to lead off the All-Star game. And beyond that, that might be about it. Ohtani has just brought this whole group of people coming in and saying, wow, I want to check it out. I want to see what all the buzz is about. And so tonight there'll be the baseball star game. And that's pretty much what's going on. Here in Milwaukee, the Suns, as mentioned, they'll have a Zoom here in about 45 minutes. They are kept away. They are locked down. They are trying to take care of business here tomorrow night. I will just tell you, I'm going around town today. It's a very different feel than Phoenix. I don't see Bucks fans out. I don't see a lot of green on. I don't get, there's a couple of storefronts where I walked out for morning coffee and walked on the boardwalk, a few signs, but really you couldn't tell other than when you get close to the arena. When you get close to the arena, it's very evident. Okay, there's something big going on. All right, Nate McMillan and then Bob Ryan from Milwaukee. We appreciate you jumping on board with us. We're back after this timeout. All right, as promised, in between games 3 and 4 here in Milwaukee, and we continue to bring voices of people that Monty Williams has said impacted him and his journey to get to where he is. Fans are just fascinated. A lot just learning the story about what Monty has been through and the loss of his wife at the time and the kids and getting back into the game. And Nate McMillan's name has been brought up throughout this journey. And the head coach, I won't even say interim anymore. Congratulations, first of all, on the 4-year deal with the Atlanta Hawks joins us for a few minutes. How are you, Coach?
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me.
Sure, sure. First on the Hawks, what a journey. If I had told you in, I don't know, February, January, that this was going to happen, would you believe me?
I would have no idea of what you were talking about. I mean, it really was a journey. I think at that time I was an assistant coach.
Right.
So I wasn't even in that head coaching seat. And then, when things didn't go well and they gave me the opportunity to coach the team, I challenged the team to do better, not only the team, but the coaching staff. We needed to show that we were better than what we had shown the first part of the season. They did that. We got off to a really good start, won our first 8 games. They started to believe in the vision that we were giving them. And, the chemistry got better, execution got better, and we ended up making a really good run and reaching the Eastern Conference Finals and just really having a fun season.
Yeah. No, I want to talk to you about the finals in Milwaukee, but let's get into Monty Williams for a few minutes. When did you first come across Monty, Nate?
Well, when I took over Portland, back in 2005, I was going into a rebuild situation. And what I wanted was a young coach with energy, with the knowledge, with the commitment to helping me turn an organization around. I really needed, someone with a lot of energy. And Monty was a guy that I knew of him, but I didn't have really a relationship with him. And when I interviewed him and talked to him about what I wanted to try to do in Portland, he was on board with it. And he was a big part of us turning that organization around. At that time, when we came in, they were called the Jailblazers. Mm-hmm. And we had to really change the culture. It was a successful organization, but for about 4 or 5 years, the players were getting in a lot of trouble. They had lost their fan base. Portland has a strong fan base. They had lost their fan base. The people weren't coming to the games. They didn't really respect the team or how they played. So we was given that challenge of turning it around, bringing back the respect of the game, winning basketball, playing the game the right way. Character was really important for us. So we needed to do it not only on the floor, but in the community as well. And it was no better, better person to bring on at that time, now that I look back, than Monty Williams.
When you interviewed Monty, and I know it was years ago, but what was it that struck you about him in the interview? And what were some of the questions you needed answers to that he hit on that you said, this is the guy?
Well, it's just when you talk with him, this guy is honest. He's going to be loyal. He's going to work. He's going to give you everything that he has. He's going to be committed to doing things the right way. And, he's smart. I love him. I mean, he's a brother. He's a brother from another mother. And we've really developed that. We've continued to have that friendship, and it has really grown into a big brother, little brother type of relationship. But, you know, he had, you know, had a high basketball IQ. He knew exactly what he wanted to do and how he could help. And I believed in that. And, you know, he believes in his faith. And, you know, right off the bat that nothing is going to be. He's not going to leave that. Mm-hmm. He's not going to stray away from that. You know, his faith is and what he believes in keeps him in line and keeps him doing the things that leads him into the future, you know, far as his family, his job, his friends. You know, he's just committed to doing things the right way.
Nate McMillan with us for a few minutes, head coach of the Atlanta Hawks, talking about Monty Williams as we are in between games 3 and 4 here in Milwaukee in the NBA Finals. When did you know that you had a head coach on your staff in Monty Williams?
We had a lot of injuries in Portland, and there was one day we didn't even have enough guys to practice. So I came in one morning and I had laid out my workout gear because I was going to play the next day. Mm. And I came in and I said, look, we got to play because we just got to work on execution. We could only play 4-on-4 because we just didn't have enough bodies. And Monty would often play with the guys. But I told Monty this particular day, you're not playing, I'm playing. Because I thought we were soft. I wanted it to be physical. I wanted to rough some guys up. So I was going to play. And Monty said, no, coach, I got it. I said, no, I got it. I got it. And we went out and we started playing. And it got so physical. And my team was winning, by the way. But it got so physical that one of our players dove for a loose ball and a couple guys just crashed to the floor and he got cut. He had to get stitches. So he had to leave the scrimmage to go to get stitched up at the hospital. So now Monty has to play. We need another body because we don't have enough guys to finish. So Monty has to play. So now Monty and I are guarding each other. And I run out to Monty is running out to set a pick and roll. And I run out behind him and I tear my Achilles. And this is now I tear my Achilles in this scrimmage. The next day we got a game. And I'm on the sidelines with I can't get up.
Yeah.
So I gave the duties to Monty to coach to get up and make the calls. And right then I knew that, he pretty much, I mean, everything went smooth. I think we won most of those games that he was calling the sets and running the team. You know, I had to sit down, I'm on the sidelines in a boot on crutches and Monty is up giving the calls. Giving the calls to him, but he's coaching the team. And I knew then that he one day would be on the sidelines coaching his own team.
What do you see in Phoenix from Monty that you saw in 2005?
I see a team that is organized. They're prepared. They've done a great job of putting that roster together. James has done a great job. I coach James as well. So I work with him during that time. And Monty and I was all of us was together. But I think they've done a great job of putting that roster together riding the momentum that they had from the bubble into this season. And they are still on that momentum that they started last year. Monty has done a great job of you know, really giving that team a vision and giving them the roadmap on how they're going to accomplish their goals. And, you know, I don't know if any of them believe that they would be playing for a championship this year, but the getting into the playoffs and believing in themselves and playing better basketball is something that I know they for a fact felt that they could do. And with the addition of Chris Paul being added to that roster, they felt that they could have success in the playoffs. And now they're in the finals. And I know they believe that they can win. And I think they can. You know, it's everything is working out for them. You know, the roster, they're healthy. I think that's a big key to having success in the finals. You know, having your team pretty healthy, and they're playing, you know, really the best basketball in the league right now.
Before I get you out of here, you saw Giannis up close and personal. We're sitting here last two games, 40 and 10. Last time it was done four times in a row was Jordan in 93. Fans in Phoenix are concerned of can Ayton stay on the court. Chris Paul referred to building a wall after the last game. Mm-hmm. Just as an analyst coach looking at this from a distance, what would you do if you went through it and trying to keep Giannis away from going off? It's a pick your poison. Either you get around him or you say, okay, we're going to have the other guys beat us. Middleton's going to go get his 25. Holiday's going to go get his 18. Lopez is going to go get his – pick your poison, I guess, is the best way to put it, right?
Well, I mean, you know, Milwaukee is a team that they're going to attack the paint. They're going to attack the paint with penetration. And they're going to attack the paint with second opportunities. You know, so what they're talking about building that wall, you have to do that because Milwaukee is going to be attacking, trying to get downhill. And with Giannis playing, he does a great job of consistently attacking your paint. And, you know, they will take what you give them. If you're building that wall and you're giving them 3-point shots, they will take that. Mm-hmm. But if you're guarding the perimeter and you are allowing Giannis to play 1-on-1, they will also take that. You know, so I think, you know, the wall is something that when he is playing, you need to try to show him a wall, because if there's any type of cracks or if he thinks that he can get a leg or a foot through that and get to the paint. And that wall has to be built above the free throw line. You know, a lot of teams, they tend to play Giannis a little soft. And, you know, if he gets a foot in the paint, his next step is at the rim. I mean, this guy can take two dribbles from half court and get to the rim, you know, so his launch pad is a lot further out than most guys. So I think you have to build that wall a lot higher against him and try to keep them out of the paint. Milwaukee is a paint team. They're going to attack you with penetration. They're going to attack you. The offensive glass, the excellent offensive rebounding team. They are big and physical with Lopez and Portis, you know, and they basically won the paint against us. They really dominated the paint. I think it was only really one game that we did a decent job. We allowed only 44 points in the paint, whereas they was averaging about 60 points in the paint against us, which is way too many.
Before I get you out of here, anything about Monty that I didn't ask you that you're like, Brad, here's the deal with him, or did you get it all out of you?
No, I know you guys got a great coach there, and I think he'll be there for a long time. because he's going to represent that organization the right way. The players are going to represent and play the right way. And as long as they, you know, give him, you know, as we used to say, the ingredients, the players to be competitive, to give themselves a chance to win, they're going to win. And you got the right man there. I think he'll be there for a long time. And I think if you continue to give him the roster that you will see, you will continue to see these types of results.
Great stuff there. I appreciate the time. Congratulations on the contract, Nate. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
There's Nate McMillan, head coach of the Atlanta Hawks. And we're back with more in Milwaukee after this timeout. All right, nice enough to have Bob Ryan back on the show for a few minutes, the quintessential sports writer, of course, covered the NBA inside and out and still looks deep into what's going on in the world of basketball. Before I get into what's going on here in Milwaukee with the Suns, I have to start with USA Basketball. Just, is this panic session? Patty Mills took them down last night. Pop tried to play it off. The Olympics are a few weeks away. A lot of people talking about it, Bob. I'm really curious your thoughts. Is it time to panic a little bit?
Well, panic. People think it was going to be a walkover. I guess they're panicking. I had a question, though. I thought our team was going to be good enough. It's not a perfect A team. And we're long past the stage when we could win the Olympics with a B team. So you need at least an A-minus, a B-plus team. And my question was, is there any country stacked up enough with enough NBA talent to give us a threat the way Spain did in 2008 and 12? Both of the gold medal games against Spain were under in question with like 3 minutes to go. You know, that's the kind of reference I was making. I didn't foresee. And if you had told me we'd lose to Australia, I would have said, Nigeria blew my mind. And I've seen, look, I've been in this international scene since 1992, and I've watched that. But, and I know what Nigeria's problem always was, no coaching. Now they got Mike Brown. And there's seven NBA players, none of whom anybody can name, by the way. And, right? But that's a shock because we did beat them by, 83 in London and 43 in an exhibition game at 16. So that for the idea of them beating us, that got my attention. And I'm not shocked about losing to Australia. We're going to have to get our act together. And remember, this team isn't thrown together. They haven't had any. We just still have the whole team. Booker's going to be on that team, you know? So I think, right? So, you know, we're going to have to work to do it.
Yeah, there's no Booker. There's no Drew Holiday. There's no Chris Middleton. They're all here. But I guess when I'm watching the game, it's the game here in the States has turned into a lot of foul, flop acting. The international game, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Bob, it's physical. You're going to get hit. That's different than the NBA. Am I right on this? That's how I've
I never framed it that way, but I'm listening to you. I'll have to, maybe things are evolving that way. I never thought about it because the thing, the difference I always thought and where we've emulated them was the drive and kick. You know, they were the first to absolutely emphasizes their number one mode of attack was drive and kick, outside shooting, 3-point shooting. They were ahead of us for a while. They being Europe, a lot of European players, including the big men. You know, the evolution of the big man, the demise of the five man, is a European evolution. You know, we first saw it with Krešimir Ćosić, and then I'm telling you, when it was Yugoslavia back in the 70s, Krešimir Ćosić was the godfather of all this big man facing up from 25 feet. Look it up. All right, he's the guy. And then they've all emanated from them, and we've all come around. But then again, think about who some of the practitioners are in the NBA. Jokic, all right, is the best. And so, you know, but the guys have come around. Look at Brook Lopez, totally reinvented himself. Went from never, ever, ever taking a three, except maybe at the end of a 24-second clock, to where, look where he is today. So, you know, that's the way the world is. Anyway, physical, I hadn't thought about that. I'll give you, you're one up on me on that.
Yeah, it's just a view of it. Bob Ryan with us for a few minutes, chopping it up. Suns tomorrow night against the Bucks here in Milwaukee, game number four. What do you make out of this series so far?
All right. People overreact. And it really frustrates me, the ignorance of history. I mean, your sport history. Yes, the Bucks won game three. They ought to win game three. I've been watching the NBA closely since 69. And in that series, the Celtics lost the first two games in L.A. Guess what? They won in seven, including on the road. I don't have the numbers in front of me, okay? But I tell you that I expect when it's 0-2, unless there's a clear mismatch, when a team goes home after 0-2, that's a good bet. I've seen it too many times. I lived through counting by myself just personally. Innumerable times 0-2 went to 2-2, and eventually the better team flexes its muscle, wins in six as a rule. Celtics did that with Buffalo in 93. They did that with Phoenix. They did with Phoenix in 76. I've seen and many, many teams. So they won the game. Fine. Wonderful. Now we get rolling. Let's see what happens in game four. That's not a gimme for them at all. And I think game three is predictable, that you expect that if there's any kind of parity at all. Sometimes there isn't. You know, we've had six sweeps, but you don't anticipate a sweep. I never do.
Okay, so Giannis, 40 and 10, 40 points, two games in a row. He's asked afterwards, and rightly so, about comparisons to Jordan, who did it four games in a row. And, of course, Giannis is like, I'm Giannis. I'm not going to get in that discussion. What do you see out of Giannis? I'm not saying compare him to Michael Jordan, but
that's a preposterous comparison because they're different players. One's 7 feet tall and one's 6 feet six. Right. Or five, whatever he was. I mean, so stop it. Why don't people, what's the matter with people? I'm embarrassed with sometimes people in our profession, Brad, that just pose ridiculous things. Anyway, Giannis, the interesting thing about what's going on is that the Giannis deterrent in the last two playoffs was the wall. They were able to build the wall. Mm-hmm. Well, the Suns certainly didn't build any walls in these games. And he's doing anything he wants to do. And what he wants to do is spend his entire life in a 6-foot circumference around the basket, which he should. Forget the stupid three just to prove to people you can make it. That's ridiculous. Do what you do best. I want to see what they can do. You know, Ayton got in foul trouble, but even so, he's still spotting him 4 inches. And he's not a muscle man. You know, it's not like he's going to beat him up. So I don't know. This is going to be interesting. But the last 2 years, teams have had a neutralization, you know, to a degree about him. And but right now the Suns don't have an answer. And it's, you know, but that's the other thing, Brad. And you know this. Playoffs are series are adjusting to an adjustment to the adjustment. Monty's going to come up with try something else. Now, I was amazed when he went short and small the other day, you know, and he's got Cameron Johnson, and I mean, that's not going to work. Come on, Monty, you know better than that. But he's got to figure something. And maybe, you know, I don't know, pick up the ball deeper in the court to prevent him from getting the ball by better defense on the ball handlers. That would be my, you know, the first thing. I'll say one thing and I'll shut up for a minute. Give him his due. He is the greatest finisher in the history of basketball. There has never been anyone that size with that ball handling capability that can and who can take off from so far out, whether he's in transition or not, and finish. He's the. I like to be judicious with the words always and never. Well, or superlatives. This is the greatest finisher we have ever seen. Don't let him finish if you can help it.
Who reminds you? Who does he remind you of in your years of seeing the game? Past tense.
Nobody. Nobody's been 7 feet tall. I mean, we have one other guy that is in the discussion of being that tall that has extraordinary ability and is actually a better player because he's a better shooter, and that's Durant. Right. And other than that,
Some people say Garnett back in the day.
He's triple A in terms of the offensive capability, better defensive player. Kevin Garnett's all around. Kevin Garnett's a fascinating player because he's the most reluctant great scorer in the history of basketball. You know, he scored 25,000 points and nobody ever remembers him taking a shot, you know, so that's different. He's different. I mean, only because of the size. Oh, he's a big step in that evolutionary chain that began with Chosich that I talked about. Yeah. And right now, you know, the ultimate manifestation of that is Jokic, not Antetokounmpo, because Antetokounmpo's greatest asset is going to the basket. which is you know which is not Jokic's. So he's sui generis. And by the way, most of the truly great ones are. There's something about them that distinguishes them from everybody else, you know. And certain times there's very fascinating comparisons, like Michael and Kobe, the skill set, the mindset, you know, that's the closest pair twin thing I can think of that in this discussion.
Before I get you out of here, Chris Paul. So Chris Paul comes to Phoenix. He was the glue that was missing. But his overall game, Bob, he's never been in this position before. And there's some people that have said, well, this will validate him as a basketball player. And that's always the case when it comes to some in winning a title. Charles Barkley and I have gone back and forth on that when he was in Phoenix, that he's never really validated. And I said, that's BS. You had a great career. Chris Paul, what do you see out of him as a player overall, not just here in Phoenix?
The first fallacy people have, and I'll give you exhibit A, was Isaiah Thomas. The first fallacy people have is that a guard at this level can control the game totally or be the number one factor in winning a game or a series or a team establishing a reign of superiority, whatever you want to call it. It ain't happening. When we had the great triumvirate of Magic, Michael, and Larry reigning supreme over basketball, pressing his nose against the glass was a 6'1" guy named Isaiah Thomas. There's only so much a little guy can do, okay? He can't affect the game the way a mid-sized all-around player can, rebounding, passing, assisting, defending, willing. There's only so much a little guy can do. He is as good at what you can do as he's in the elite level of all-time great point guards, you know, understanding how to do, as Cousy used to say, hand out the sugar, you know, and make his own shot. He's the master of the mid-range shot. God love him for that. He's a wonderful player. But guess what? No point guard is going to be the best player in basketball at any given point in time, and maybe not even the best player in the series. I'm sorry. So people should take him off the hook. He can only do so much.
I appreciate your time. Appreciate your insight. And thanks for chopping it up on the basketball front, Bob. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for remembering me. Thank you.
You got it. There's Bob Ryan. Of course we remember you. And we're back with more after this timeout.